I want to finish with the time evolution of density matrices, talk about decoherences, and also composite system. Composite system would be like real quick, not in details, and then start with path integrals today. So there's a lot to do, and for the density matrix, I would be using Bohr, and for path integral formulation, it will be combination of Bohr and slides. They are error-free. The lectures, if you can check, I think I have fixed the notation problems, but if you still see some typing errors or some issues, just email me personally that you found some errors and so on. Before your interviews, I'll keep on improving all those notes, and whenever I do that, I'll just send an email that so-and-so lecture has been updated, the notes have been updated, okay? Good thing, the reviews are, like, I'm satisfied with the reviews if you're giving genuine ones. The only thing right now I need to improve on is with my notations. So, yeah, I'll work with that as well now. So thank you for that. We were talking about density matrices, and we define density matrix or density operators as an outer product of these states. If it's in a pure state, and by pure we meant that if all the spins we were talking about, spins or all the systems are of the same kind, and if they are not, then we multiply them by their weights or their probabilities in the ensemble. So today we are going to talk about the time evolution, because density matrix is another way of working with quantum systems, like we do with Schrodinger-Heisenberg interaction picture. So this is another way of doing, and experimentalists mostly use this approach, because in experiments you can't work with single systems, you always work with an ensemble, right? So whenever it comes in to talk about ensemble of systems, you prefer density matrices. And time evolution would mean how the density matrices, they evolve with time. And since they are operators, the time evolution should look something like you expect for operators, right, in the Heisenberg picture. So let's see if that's true. Not exactly like that. There's a minor difference, but yeah. So let's say this is the density matrix at some initial time. And I'm assuming that in my mixture, the probabilities for the individual subsystems, it's not changing. So if I have initially at time t naught, if my subsystems are composed of half probability ups and half probability down, this is not changing, okay? So these classical probabilities are same. They are not dependent on time. Now, if I say that my system has evolved at a later time, so each of my subsystems has evolved, the up spins have evolved into superposition of up and down or so on. I know this time evolution should be represented by my time evolution operator. And if I substitute this in my density matrix representation, it's straightforward to see that the density matrix is going to evolve like this, right? And what's the equation of motion? So the equation of motion should look something similar to the equation of motion of Heisenberg, because it's a kind of operator. Note the difference. I think in the Heisenberg, it was a U dagger here for operators and U here. And it makes sense that it's opposite, because density matrices are kind of representing your wave function, right? So they are operators, but they give you information about your wave function. So this should be the correct evolution for them. Yes.
You mean rho of t?
See, I said I'll try to be more careful and yeah. But yeah, just keep pointing with these mistakes. Yeah, thank you. Okay. So if I write the equation of motion, I just take a derivative of how my system is evolving, and I can say, and if this is absorbed here, there shouldn't be any sum over omega I, because it's absorbed in my definition for rho t naught, okay? Would be and we already know the equation of motion for u's, right? So we know that so if I use this in here, I can say that I can simplify this and write it as my equation of motion for rho. As so this is so this would be rho t, and this is also rho at a later time t, and I can write it as, okay. And if I want to see how the observables, they evolve with time, because in experiments, it's the evolution of observables. And we did it for Heisenberg and Schrodinger picture as well. So if I try to find how observables are going to evolve in time in my density matrix formulation, by the way, this is called Lowell equation of motion. And I know that my operators in density matrix formulation are nothing but trace of my density matrix with the corresponding operator for the observable. So if I see how this evolves with time, and assuming that this is time independent, doesn't have an inherent, like implicit time dependence in it, then I can just write this as I think it was a rho. Can someone confirm? Was it rho a or a rho? This is right? Okay. And I know what is d rho by dt from there. And we know that the traces, there's an interesting property that you can change the order and it doesn't change the trace of the matrices. So if I change the order of these matrices in here and take a trace, I can write my this is my equation of motion for observables. All right.
That's for time independent A and time independent Hamiltonian, right?
Yes. Hamiltonian could be time dependent as well. We didn't use any fact that it's time independent Hamiltonian. Okay. But even if A is time dependent, you'll just get one more term with, I think you get something like this. I have to be sure about that. Okay. So this is some standard mathematics. Few of you might have already seen that. What I want to discuss is the decoherence thing. That's the most interesting, and I hope even if you have seen density matrices, this might be something new for at least half of the class. So any questions with this? Okay. Now, can we discuss decoherences? And I'll ask you what you mean by decoherence, but let me build some kind of ground for you to think in that direction, and then maybe I can ask what decoherence means to you. So remember last lecture we wrote a density matrix for a pure spin in a block sphere. So let's construct a density matrix for a mixture this time, okay? And it might be pure mixture or not, but it contains more than one subsystems, okay? So let's first construct a density operator or density matrix for spin half system, but now my system is not pure, so it's not like spin half in the entire ensemble, but let's say there are two subsystems the first subsystem contains Na electrons or spins and they are prepared in psi A state. Okay, the second subsystem in the box contains NB electrons prepared in psi B. So psi A could be superposition of up or down or just up, or I don't care. Okay, it's a general pure state for the first system. So all my NA electrons are in this state, all my NB electrons are in this state, okay? So if I find the probabilities of the first system, the classical one, I would say the probability or the weight factors is NA over NA plus NB. Okay. Now I know the classical probabilities, I know the states, I can write the density matrix for such a system, and I would say it would be WA and let's say that my psi is, we're in some superposition of up and downs because they are half spin system. So up as 0 and down as 1. And psi b is also in superposition, but it's a different combination. So all right, so if I substitute all these things in here, it's just taking out a product, and you can check, you'll get a matrix for this density operator containing two subsystems as this. Get 4 matrix elements because it's a two-level system, so you'll get a 2x2 matrix. Now what these diagonal matrix elements they tell you about, and what does these off-diagonal elements they tell you about? That's the question we are asking. Okay. Now if let's say I do a measurement on my system. Okay, so this is a box containing Na electrons in this configuration, Nb electrons in this state, not configuration, sorry. And now I ask you that I'm doing measurement on my system, and what should be the population of my up spins? So I do measurement, it contains these, so it contains psi A, the number is Na, and psi b's, and number of spins in psi b's is nb. I do measurement, na plus nb times, and I ask you what, how many of these spins should I see in up?
The fraction of measurements that you get would be the first element of the density.
Yes. So you'll say, okay, first I need to find how many of spins are in psi A, and within psi A, how many spins are in up, and add how many spins are in NB, and within that, how many are in psi A, right? So you are going to kind of include the quantum probabilities and the classical probabilities in your answer for population. And this is the number of spins you're going to see in up state, right? Just simple probability question, okay? And same for spins in down state. So the diagonal matrix elements of your density operator, it gives you the information about the population, all right? So if you do measurement, you get the, obviously, in your measurement, you'll only get ups or downs. You'll always get the information about the population. So measurements on your system, they give information about your population, which are hidden inside these density matrix, in the diagonal elements of this density matrix. So what these off diagonal elements they tell you about density, like about the system, is that is how coherent your system is, okay, and or maybe how much decoherence in your system. It's the same thing, right? Can you define what you think should be a coherent system or a decoherent system? And then we'll see some cases where I can see how my system can decohere. Okay, if I have a perfectly coherent system, how can it decohere? But for that, first we need to understand what is a coherent system. Maybe by an example, if I have spins prepared in, is it a, so 100 spins prepared for perfectly in this state, is it a coherent system? Will you see an interference pattern with this system, right? 100 spins, 1000 spins prepared exactly in this. So phi is constant for all the spins. Is it a coherent system yet? Will you see an interference pattern? So how many of you say yes? And how many of you think no? Okay, it's still a very perfectly coherent system. If these phases are fixed for all your spins, okay, it's a coherent system. Now I say, I have a system which is in zeros and ones, not in superposition. So half and up and half and down, is it a coherent system? No. Why? Yeah, perfect.
But in here we'll be talking about coherence when you observe like a sort of interference pattern in the system.
And this won't give you any, so it's kind of a classical mixture. There shouldn't be a phenomena like interference, which is a quantum signature, right? So it's a decoherent system. So let us write the density matrix for all these three cases which we just discussed, okay, and see how the density matrix for each look like. This is easy, right? We did it yesterday. So half in up and half in down. So let's write this as case one. It's a classical mixture. How does the density matrix look like? Half, yes. And it's an identity. Perfect. So no diagonal matrices, off diagonal matrix elements, okay? Now let's write the density matrix for a coherent system of this kind, okay?
What's the definition of a coherent system?
Coherent system is, experimentally, it means a perfectly prepared system. And there are no, it's like all the states are of same kind, also in terms of phase differences. So if I have like 100 spins, they are all well prepared. So coherent system is a well prepared system, I would say. So all the states have these phi exactly same.
Can we say that it's a system of pure states?
If it's a system with all same, yes. Like all in same state, it's a pure state, yes.
Because I mean, I see some, because last lecture you said that for a mixed state, we have the off diagonal entries zero, right?
Yes.
For density matrix. And the same thing holds here, right?
Yes, it's still a mixed state and it's a decohort, and you can say there's no interference pattern, I would see. Yes. So the definitions for these two overlap, but mixed states are kind of decohort states, but decohort states are not necessarily always mixed, and we'll see that. Okay?
So coherence somehow encapsulates pure.
Yeah. It's a broader term which includes the mixed states as well. But there are other systems which can show decoherence as well. Okay?
So, can we also say that, like, decoherence is the loss of one to homotopy of the surface system?
Not exactly. We'll see a case where they're still in superposition,
okay,
but they don't have coherences. Okay. So that's a mixed state, it's decohered. Let's construct our density matrix for a perfectly prepared, a well-prepared system of this kind. Okay, so 1,000 spins exactly with same phi, and when you write density matrix for this, simple math, I'm not going to throw the simple maths. Let's get to the concepts. Case third. Now let's say I have thousands and thousands of spins. They are in superposition of zeros and one. So if I do measurement on them, I'll see half in up and half in down. But each of them has a different phase. So I have first spin in this state, second spin in this state, and there are n number of them, and a general would be like nth spin. All right? So if you do measurement, you won't see any differences between these two and these two. You'll say, oh, they are in superposition of half, like half up and half down. But when I write density matrix for such a case, I think there should, and there are n kind of the system, so I think there should be 1 over n or 1 over 2. So I'm not sure about the numbers here, but let's not worry about those numbers. They are not giving us any information regarding the coherences. But what I'll see is the diagonal elements are same, which should be, because for 100 spins of this kind and 100 spins of this kind, I should see 15 up and 15 down, right? The population is same for them. On the off diagonal, I would get something like this. And my note says 2n, but I'm not sure about this number here. What should be this sum? If the source which is producing this sum is just randomly emitting these phases, what should be this?
Zero.
It should be zero, right? Because it's a random. This is a kind of, it's a kind of, I would say, vector representation on a circle. And each of these means a different orientation for E or phi. And if this is a random number, it means all these arrows in my circle would sum up to give me zero, right? Which exactly look like the mixed state. Although I had systems in my superposition, there was some quantumness here, right? They were in superposition. But in the end, what I got was off diagonal element zero, which is a signature of decoherent system, which means that if I don't have a well-prepared system, it's a decohered system, I won't see any interference pattern. And I'll show you a very nice simulation what I mean by this, okay? How the interference pattern from here to here is lost if these phases are not controlled. So experimentally, it would mean that your source, which is producing spins, it's not a good source. Change your apparatus. Or it would mean your system or your spins are interacting with your environment. Because when spins interact with environment, they'll gain these random faces. Okay? Yeah.
So then would it be correct to say for a coherent state, the density matrix always has some non-zero of time?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And it's if it's a perfectly prepared system, then I think the off-diagonal terms will have 1-1. Actually, these off-diagonal terms are, they kind of give you a measure of decoherence. And as the system starts decoring, these off-diagonal terms, they start reducing. Okay? And we'll see an example as well, how these off-diagonal terms from a well-prepared system, how diagonal terms, they start decreasing and they are lost, which means the system is completely decohered. So it's not like switch on and off. It's a continuous process, how your coherent system can slowly interact with the environment and become decohered. Okay? Can we get to that example, which would make things much clearer? But any questions so far? So if your system has no quantum, it's a mixed system, off-diagonal term zero, it's not a coherent system. If your experimental apparatus is not good, it's a decoherent system. If your system is interacting with, it's an open system, it's not a closed system, even then you'll get a decoherent system, okay? All right, so let's think like experimentalist, maybe. Let's say I have, again, a spin, a box of spins, and, okay, and 100 spins, but these, and I write density matrix for that 100,000 spins. I write them as rho 0, 0, rho 1, 1, rho 0, 1, and rho 1, 0. And what these mean here are these matrices, or you can say those matrix elements which I wrote up there. Okay, so just a short form for these matrix elements here. Okay, so these give me the population for ups, population for downs, and these gives me the information about coherences. Now, in that box of spins, what I do, I make a transformation, a unitary transformation. I give a Z rotation to all my spins, okay? So if my state was in, let's say, it could be in any superposition state of zero up and down. I give it a Z rotation to all my spins. How should the state should look like? Z would mean a minus sign here, right? So now if I write the density matrix for all my systems which are given a Z rotation, let me write it as psi prime. This is the basic for my experiment. Now, the actual experiment starts. I have a box of spin. I choose one spin. I decide to do Z rotation or not with some probability P. Okay, so spin, I say, okay, let's not Z rotate it. Another spin, oh, let's Z rotate it. Okay, so there's some probability P that I'm doing Z rotations on my spin. In that case, I can say my experiment is consisting of a unitary operation, which is a random unitary operation. Where with probability P, I perform sigma z, and with probability 1 minus p, I do nothing. And we just now saw how the density matrices, they evolve with time. So I have this unitary operation defined there. Let's say I have a box at t not 0, all spins up. At a later time t, I perform this unitary operation rho on my system, and I want to see how my rho now looks like, the density looks like. So if I use that, I would say my rho now at new time t, which has evolved, means I'm doing, with some probability p, I'm doing sigma z on my rho. So this is my rho t naught. Is this part of the board visible to all? Okay. And with 1 minus p probability, I did nothing to my rho. Does this make sense? Just take a minute to see how I have defined the unitary. Okay? So p probability, I made a sigma z rotation, and that's how rows, they evolve with a unitary. And 1 minus p probability, I did nothing to my original row. So now if I write the density matrix for this, and my new row would be, nothing happens to the population. Okay. Now, again, the box. Now my probability is a continuous variable, okay? So now I keep on increasing my probability p from 0 to, let's say, 0.1, 1, so on and so on. What do you see on the off-diagonal terms? They start to reduce, right? And that's how the system is kind of interacting, maybe. So sigma z rotation is kind of, system is interacting with environment, and your state is changing from, state is gaining a phase, right? And it's a slow process. So when your probability is exactly half, you'll see the off-diagonal elements have disappeared. And then again, coherences will come back if you start increasing p more than half. It doesn't mean that in interaction with the environment, the coherences can come back. Okay, I don't know if that could happen. But this is a well-regulated experiment done by me. So I am trying to induce decoherences by increasing the probability that I'm doing z rotations on my spin. Okay, so it's a well-regulated experiment that I'm performing to see how I can reduce or maybe see back how my system became coherent. All right? Any doubts, questions, discussions? This is something I really liked.
Can decoherence happen if the spins interact among themselves?
Yes. Because that's going to cause some kind of phase difference as well. So experimentalists, they do a wonderful art job, I would say. It's so difficult to maintain coherences in experiments. They are artists. Yeah?
Can we say that if a system is in exactly two subsystems, that's the maximum decoherence possible?
If they are in classical picture, they are like classical up down, or they are still in superposition. The two subsystems, there are two cases. One could be exactly they have like some kind of measurement has been done when half are in up and half are in down. That's a decohered system, yes. But if there are two subsystems and they are still in superpositions, then these density matrices would have some number, or it could be zero, depending on how these phases within these subsystems are controlled.
Okay.
Did I confuse you more or
a little bit?
Okay, we can talk about these three cases later as well, okay?
Is decoherence related to entanglement?
No. With the environment, yes. It's so I wouldn't really exactly say the result here, like the answer here, but when the system is decoding, it's kind of sharing some information with the environment, right? So yeah, maybe you could call it some kind of entanglement as well with the environment. Not so sure, I'm sorry, yeah. But it's definitely interacting and sharing some information with the environment. And if that could be termed as entanglement, yeah.
Or like, to be free, my question, when off-diagonal terms are zero, can you say that we are in complete decoherence?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a completely decoherent system. Okay. Let's talk about composite systems, and that should be real quick. And we'll start with path integrals. I'm really excited about this topic. I have some good animations to show you. So we know how composite systems, they look like in wave function formalism. We covered that in our last lecture. So I have two systems, A and B.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So just trying to like wrap my head around this, you said, so we can continuously decrease the coherence of the system, right?
Yes. We just saw one experiment how to do that, yeah.
Okay.
But this decoherence could happen naturally as well, where it's not controlled, like if the system is interacting with the environment.
But so in a broader way, coherence is like is everything that we consider a quantum property of the system, right? It's like it's responsible for interference. It's basically like
coherence, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So you can continuously vary the quantumness of your system from a quantum.
Yeah, you're trying to do a measurement on the system. And what does a measurement do to a quantum system?
It collapses the wave function.
Yeah.
But it's instantaneous, and here we can do continuously. Is it because we have many states that we can do that, or what is...
Yes, the collapses for individual systems is happening, but it's a continuous process for the ensemble, right? For a single system, yes, it's happening instantaneously. Yeah, you're right. Okay, that's a good question. Okay, so this is how we write the states. So from here, it shouldn't be much, like, it's not a head spinner that the density matrix for our composite systems should be written like this, which are I think it's better to do an example to see rather than doing what do you say that? Like it would be a better thing to do an example, okay? So let's do one quick, very simple example. Let's say my psi A is, again, spins. It's in up, and psi B is in down. And you can choose to write in vector form as well, whatever you prefer. But while working with composite systems, I personally always prefer using matrices, OK? But it's your personal choice what you want to use. So psi A, B would be, and we did this in our first lecture, would be 1, zero, 1, 0, 0.
And
right?
We have an extra tensor product sign in the density matrix.
Here?
The line before that. I think we have an extra tensor product sign.
Thank you. Yeah. There shouldn't be any tensor product. Yeah. Or you could also represent them as this. That's why I got confused. Which means density matrix for composite system is tensor product of density matrix for rho and b. But this is not always true. This is only true for such systems where I'm able to write my joint system as a product, okay? Not for entangled systems. For entangled system, this doesn't work. We'll see. All right, so this is psi b, and if I write rho a b, it should be simple. I don't know, maybe the second element is non-zero and all other are zero. So you can do this simple math, right? Simple matrix multiplication. So rho a b would be just this matrix multiplication. So it's going to be a 4x4 matrix, which makes sense because for a two-level system, you had a 2x2 matrix. Now you have a four-level system. So two for your first and two for your second. It's a four-level system, so your density matrix should be a 4x4 matrix. All right? What I want to discuss here is how to trace out the information regarding one of the systems, because this is something which you are going to use in quantum information. Okay, so is this thing clear? It's just simple matrix multiplication, and this is how you represent composite systems. Okay, great. So how can you extract? So let's say the situation is a spin and an environment. So it's an open system. Your spin is interacting with the environment. It evolves. You have some psi. You write the density matrix for psi. But what you are interested is in not in the environment, but only the information for system. So how do you extract the information for your system from this composite density matrix? For A, by tracing out B. So what's the standard procedure is to take trace with B on rho AB, and it would give me rho A. What does this mean mathematically? It would mean that so this is rho A, tensor product rho B. And trace with respect to B would mean right? So summing over all the diagonal elements of my B. And since this should not affect my system A, it's a product state, I can write this as which is 1. So what is left is just my information for A. Let's do one example. I think it would be more clear if we do one example. Okay? And the example which I'm going to give is for the entanglement. So I'll use this time for showing how to take partial traces and also show you the fact that for entangled system, this is not true. Okay, usually it's true if you trace out one and write the density matrix for, let's say, row A, trace out the other, write density matrix for row B, take tensor product, it should always be equal to the joint, but it's not true for entangled system. Okay, so let's do one example for an entangled Bell state. Yeah.
Oh, so just to clarify, so for partial trace, do we take trace just using the state of B, not the basis for the subsystem?
Oh no, for the basis. It's just a short representation. It's obviously using the basis, yes.
Okay, okay.
Yes. It's just a short representation, notation, I would say. Yeah. I still have board, so. So we'll use one of the Bell states. So Bell states are entangled, and we also saw one of the other entangled states, the singlets. Okay. So in Bell states, if your first spin is in up, the other is always in up, and if the first spin is in down, then it's always in down. Can you quickly write the density matrix for this state? You can work, choose to work in matrices or use sket notation. And just quickly tell me what you get in terms of matrices or. Maybe I should leave this as an exercise and give you 3-4 minutes to do. I'll write the answers here. You discuss among yourselves. Do it as a group exercise. Find the composite density matrix for this composite state, okay? And then trace out A and then see what's the density, or trace out B and see what's the density matrix for A. I'll give you 3-4 minutes to do that. Yeah?
0, 0, and 1.
Kill me. Yeah, it's 0, 0, and 1, 1. I don't want silence. It's really awkward. Can you work among yourself and then just quickly do and then see who's the first one to do?
After research, six.
Maybe you have to be here while I sit it out.
Great. So did you all get a matrix like this in matrix representation? In bracket, you should have got something like this. Yes? It's a? Oh, there's a, that's, yeah, there's a row missing. Oh. So you are good at math than I am. Yeah. And I'm sure you're good at physics too than I am. Yeah. And did you get this as your trace? Maximally mixed state?
How do you use a computer using matrices?
The partial trace?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
So you just...
Yeah, I'm just switching from here to there. Okay. Yeah, that's so inconvenient. Yeah, I don't know how to take partial trace using matrices.
There is a computational language. Total reshaping the matrix by dimensions of each of the subsystems.
Okay.
And then we will have like a vector. And then we will find the ground product of vectors, and then the final result is the resistance.
Oh.
I can write it more detail.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. But I don't know how to do that using matrix representation. Maybe more experts on density matrix would know. But this is the point which I want to convey is now if you take this partial trace with A, just trace out A, and try to find the density matrix for B, you'll again end up getting a mixed state. And when you take tensor product of these mixed states, you won't get the matrix, density matrix you started with in this particular case for the entangled system. If your systems were not entangled, this would have been true. But let's not do the example. I think this is a good enough exercise to see how to take partial traces. Yeah.
You mean the entanglement between system A, subsystem A, and subsystem B?
Yes. Yes. So it's kind of, you start with a pure state. This is a pure state. But you end up in a mixed state, something like that. And density matrices, this approach is one of the ways to find if the system is entangled or not. There are a number of measures of entanglement, and this is one of them, this partial trace method, to see if a system is entangled or not. Okay? And probably this would be also part of your quantum information elective. Yeah?
Just curiosity. So we all find that both row A and row B are I over 2. So is it a general fact that the subsystems density matrices all add up to an identity matrix?
No, it's only for entangled, yeah. Yeah. You do a different case, you'll end up getting a different row A and row B. It's not always identity.
It's always for maximally entangled, I think.
Yes, maximally entangled. Yes, sorry, yeah. Maximally entangled system. So there's also measure of entanglement. So it's not like entangled or no entanglement. There's middle as well, little bit of entanglement. something like that as well. And this is a measure of that thing.
For maximal integral system, reduced density matrices add up to identity.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Take 1 or 2 minutes till time I get my screen down and projectors up, and more questions are welcome. Okay, this is what I wanted to show with the decorin. And so this is a double slit, and I don't know how many times you are going to see double slit in this course, maybe at least a couple of more times. So this is an interference pattern. And let me add a screen to it. So you see an interference pattern on the screen, right? Now, let's say I was a very bad experimentalist and I couldn't control the phases. I have no way to control phase here, but it's a badly prepared system, or it's interacting with the environment. So let's say if I change the slit separation, do you see the interference pattern? It goes. I mean, I'm not fast enough, but if I do this fast enough, you'll see there's no interference pattern, and it's a kind of diffraction which you see. Maybe I can use slit width as well. So you see an interference pattern here. And you don't see an interference pattern. Okay? It's because my system is not in complete coherence. The phases are different at each instant of time. Okay? Quick I'll skip the recap thing. Let's rush up. But I just want to show that we did have beautiful slides for previous lecture, which I didn't share. Customary quote, everything that can happen does happen. But this doesn't mean that everything happens. And the rest of physics is about describing what can happen and what can't. So as a physicist, as a scientist, it's our job to see what can actually happen. But if something has to happen, it will definitely happen. Okay, and this is something related to what we are going to do today. And I'll mention a point where the quote actually is in alignment with our lecture. Okay, so we have done so many quantum theories, Schrodinger, Heisenberg, interaction, density. What we are going to do today is another kind of quantum formulation, which is path integral, which does exactly the same things the other formulation does. Density matrix has some different advantages. And in path integral formulation, the way we are going to build it is that it gives us a good visualization of what actually might be happening. Okay, an attempt to see what might be happening with quantum systems or classical systems. So kind of same picture, same formulation for both classical and quantum, which is not the case with Schrodinger, Heisenberg. You couldn't use it for the classical systems. But this you could use for classical as well as quantum. So you don't need a different kind of mechanics or different kind of mathematics to describe classical and systems. And also it gives you a better intuitive picture of the systems, okay? So the question is, we are going to address today is related to paths, because it's a path integral formulation. Let's start with classical system, okay? So let's say I have a system which moves from A to B, and there are a number of paths it could follow, right? It could take any of these paths, but it chooses to choose one of the paths depending on the potential. Let's say it's a free particle, so If I roll a ball, it goes in a straight line, right? The question first we are going to address is which path it's going to take, okay? And from classical mechanics, you know how this particle is going to move and which path it's going to take, which people have addressed, like scientists have. Some would say, oh, it'll follow the path of least distance, which is kind of not true for everything. Like for light, it's not the path of least distance, it's the path of least time. That's how the bending of light is related to, right? So it chooses to have the least path because the speed here and here in different medium for light is different, and that's why it chooses to take, instead of a straight line path, it chooses to have this bending. This is a famous Snell's law, and it's part of this Fermat's principle, which says that least time is the path which the light is going to take, okay? But so many attempts to explain which path the classical system would say take, and scientists, they all together, they gave a unified concept, noticing that in all these concepts, there was something which was being optimized. Either path was being optimized, or time was being optimized, or maybe energy was being optimized. So everything was unified into a concept called the path of least action, which you are very well familiar with, which says that nature operates in a manner that minimizes a very fundamental quantity called the action. And this action is related to the kinetic and potential energy of the system, okay? It depends on the Lagrangian of the system. So classically, we know that if I have a particle here, it's going to be in B following a path where it has least action, okay? The question is, what is so special about this path which is least action? Why this path? Why not the other paths? You know which path, but you don't know why this path. First question, which we are going to address, that why the path of least action is preferred by classical systems. Second question, do quantum systems also follow the path of least action or not? That's the second question which we are going to address. All right? Okay. So the broader question is, why some paths are special, and we'll see actually they are not, okay? So for a gazillionth time, the double slit experiment, and it's a famous thought experiment by Feynman, and those who have done quantum QFT, they probably might also know this thought experiment. So first thing is, let's talk about quantum perspective, because we want to also answer the second question, is quantum system taking the path of least action or not? So I have double slit, a source, a screen. I'll call the state at source as I and screen as the final state F. And I want to see if my F here has some probability or not. So I'm trying to find the probability of I evolving into F after a time, okay? Two slits, so you say, okay, I'll have to add both the probability amplitudes from A and B. Simple. True for three slits, you'll just add the probability amplitudes from three slits. I have another slit with, like, another screen with a number of slits. You'll say, okay, just find all the possible combinations of the paths it could take and just add the probability amplitudes. That should give you the probability amplitude at F. Simple enough. And the thought experiment says, let's say I have infinite number of slits between I and F, and these infinite slits, they have, like infinite screens, they have infinite slits, such that it's equivalent to not having any slit. Then, by analogy, you would say, okay, this means if my state has to change from I to F, it has to evolve from I to F, it should take all the infinite paths, and then I should add up all the probability amplitudes from these paths and get the final probability amplitude at f. Okay, this is what path integral formulation is. Okay, so what we are going to do is we are going to do a little bit of math. Can someone switch on the lights so it's a better visibility? Do you know? Oh, thank you. All right. So what we are kind of doing is, I have so I'm writing my state at I point as QI and state at F point as QF. So what we are going to do is we are going to see how the system, it evolves with time, okay? So it's a time evolution. And I'm going to discretize my time into n parts. So you can say my total time, if it's t, I'm discretizing it as n times delta t. And delta t is really, really small, okay? And at each of these delta t points, I'll say, since there are infinite, there are so many options for QI to go through, it could take any path. At each of these times, I'm going to give it infinite slits to go through, which mathematically would be something of this sort, okay? Where Q1 can be like from minus infinity to infinity. So it's like a continuum, okay? And then at this step also, I'll give infinite slits, infinite ways it could go. So Q1, Q2 are variables here. They are not fixed. Q1 could take any value from, okay. And so on. That's what we are going to do. So it would be like from here it could go here, 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 here. All those possibilities. From here it could go to anywhere. Same for here. And so on. And in the end, they all add up. And I want to see that they end up in state QF. Okay. So let's see how we can do this mathematically. So I'm interested in this probability amplitude of QI being found at QF and it's evolving in time. And for now, I'm just assuming H is 1, okay? We'll put H cross later, yeah.
Well, could you explain why we are doing the outer product for
the... Oh, this is the completeness. So this is a complete set, and which is like a kind of identity, and it's just giving you like all the options. Physically, it means it's giving you all the options that it could be in any of the states here,
okay.
Yeah. Okay, this is what we are trying to find. And if we just do whatever I said here mathematically, it would mean that I've broken my time into number of time steps. And then at each time step, I insert an identity. move this part of the board like this. I need this for sure, but for now let's use the complete board. So I've kind of inserted these identities, and these are n minus 1, okay? And I can write this as so all these n minus 1 integrals on one side, and what's left is in my notes, I'm using n minus 1 here. Can I switch? It would be easier for me not to make mistakes if I use what's given in my notes. So I have n such matrix like amplitudes which I want to find now.
What's the motivation behind the definition of A?
Of A? It's the probability. So if I take modulus square, it would give me the probability that my system evolved to F after a time capital T. That's the motivation of finding this. Okay. So these are called probability amplitudes, which give us the probability, okay? All right, so let's talk about one of these we'll find one and then substitute it here n times. That should give us A, and A is time dependent, depending on capital T. Okay, I'll keep this on board. Let's make this a star. Let's make it a star. And let's try to evaluate it for a system where Hamiltonian is okay. Now right, and my instant like respond would be okay, so this is exponential a b, a plus b, just write them as exponential A and exponential B, which should not be case here, right? Because P and Q, they don't commute. So I can't break them. But I want to somehow break them in that form. So what we are going to say is, let's say I have this exponential. And I expand it, it would be 1 minus I p squared by 2m plus vq plus 2 factorial square and so on, right? So square of this quantity here and delta t's as well. And delta t square here, okay? So if I choose my time step to be really, really small, delta, it would be nice to have something looking prettier with just of an order delta t, which makes our things much easier. And it's a very good approximation. It doesn't mean that I'm approximating my result. If it's an approximation, it's a really good approximation because my delta t is really very small. So all these higher order terms can kind of be treated as small. Okay. So if I do that, to a good approximation, I can write my exponential as and some order squared terms, which I can say are small. And now I can say k, okay. Order delta in t, this is a very good approximation that I can write this exponential as this. Okay? So now let's substitute back in here. Sorry, I missed. All right. And these q's are eigenstates for my q. I can just bring it out. It's just, it would be just a number because if you expand it, operate it, and so on. So no more an operator here. But for P, this is not a good eigenbasis. So I'll use the momentum representation. And okay, and I think there's 1 over 2 pi as well. But I'm not worrying much about the constants right now. Okay, let's just absorb everything in something called A. Not A, we have already used something like small a. Okay, so all the constants are in here. So if I do that, I would say that this matrix element here is this is vq delta t, okay, and I p square delta t by 2m p p and dp. Okay, and a q as well. Okay, I know what this is, right? It's an exponential I minus I p qj and some constants which are in my A. Okay, and now this is an eigenbasis for P. I can again join it with the V term here. What's left is QJ plus P, which is okay. So I can write this as so there's no more hat here because I operated. It's an eigenvalue equation. Did I miss a negative sign somewhere? Let me just check. Nope. All seems to be fine. Okay, yeah, everything is fine. I can't take it out of the integration because there's an integration over dp somewhere. I still have to integrate it. So let me just write it in a much neater form. Yes, I think this is good. Yeah. Perfect. Do you see anything incorrect here? Just let me know. I think this is fine. And this is a standard integral, which is a Gaussian integral, and we'll try to solve it in tutorial tomorrow. Okay? So I'm just giving you the direct result for this standard integral. It's a Gaussian integral. And you're going to see this Gaussian integral a number of times if you stick to QFT. Okay? It's the most loved integral because we know the solution for this. Okay? And can I just directly write the solution here? Okay. And there were some constant factors which we didn't take care. This is what you'll get, and the steps are in solution if you want to see. All right? And I can write this as t square, delta t square. What would this be? This would be qi dot. Okay? So let me write this as again b, some constant b. Okay. So I think we have covered all the important steps. It's just the standard integral step which we missed. So it has a standard value. If you substitute that, you'll get this. It's just one step which we missed. Okay.
There is missing I in front of me.
Okay, let's bring I here. Okay. And what is this? This is a Lagrangian. Okay. So I can say that this density matrix, this matrix is expressible in terms of the Lagrangian, which is a classical thing. Okay, we know it for all the classical systems as well. So now I'm going to substitute this in my expression there. Yeah.
So where did A come from in the second line?
The small a?
Yes.
I'm just keeping it. Because I missed some constants here, like 1 over 2 pi and a couple of more. So it's just a constant factor. Okay. It could be 1 as well. I don't know. So this is just everything except for this thing. Numbers are in here. Okay. Okay. So if I substitute this back in my I didn't get a time to show you those pictures and animations. Okay, let's complete the math part, and with the pictures, let's do it tomorrow. So, if I substitute this n times in my so this is the front. Can you see that? All right, yeah. And this dq is those n like n minus 1 integrals up there. So this is all those constant factors, which we call as capital B. And so we have used J. Let's use J is equal to 1 to n minus 1. So this is my short form for the n minus 1 integrals in that equation. Okay. And if the time which I have discretized is continuous, I can easily write this as and this quantity here is called the action. Okay. So, I would like to end here just by making some remark. What's coming? Yeah.
Back when you did like the split operator method as an approximation and pulled out the potential energy part, is that, could you get a non-negatively more accurate answer if you symmetrized that split where you did half a time step with that potential and then threw another half time step on the end? Just we did a split, but is that where you could do a symmetrized split and
okay,
get a much more accurate answer?
Can you explain what you mean by symmetrized split?
like you have, I'll just use AB term.
Yeah.
As if you did.
Okay.
And then you just have these like sandwich terms. Would that give you a more accurate answer?
I don't know. I mean, this is something really interesting. Somebody can, yeah.
I think it doesn't matter here because we can take the identity to be as small as we want. Or not, but if we were trying to compute this numerically, this would probably be useful. But since we are doing like a limit, this is what we wrote is arbitrarily correct until it becomes exact.
I mean, you are much better mathematicians than I am. For sure. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I would have to think about it more in detail to give you an answer because I've never seen such a trick, but this is an interesting one. Okay. Yeah, thank you. So let's finish. And what I want to say here is that what we are going to see next is what this term here means. And if you look at it, this includes all the infinite paths, which we said ideally system should follow to reach F. And there's a constant vector in front, which is attached to B. And if you look at this, it means that all those paths, they have the same probability. It's only this phase is changing for all those paths, right? This is an exponential factor, e to I sum s. So if you see it, it is as a vector. Again, it would mean that for each of the path, so I choose one of the path from here because this has infinite paths, right? So I choose one of the path. I'll get same b magnitude for that path. It's just the phase for that path would be somewhere. So it's a kind of vector, you would say. So vector with a constant magnitude, and each vector has a different arrow. And then we'll see that how these arrows, they add up, because we are adding all those paths, how these arrows, they add up to give us one clear path for classical systems, okay? But we'll come to this interesting thing later. Yeah?
So each phase corresponds to some infinitesimal path. Like, what the small piece of the entire
phase. So each?
Yeah, each phase, like as the action varies, but each value of action corresponds to?
One path.
One path or just infinitesimal?
No, one path gives one phase. The other path gives other phase. Third path gives third phase. And all these paths have same B. It's just a summation if you just visualize it as a sum over all the paths.